at rwjf.org.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, tomorrow is International Sex Workers' Rights Day, and we're going to talk with a local organizer of a rally and a dance party for sex workers in Ybor City in just a moment. And then later on, we're going to talk about the power of the NRA in Tallahassee. Why does it have so much power? And we'll open up the phone lines later on. First, one listener comment about yesterday's program. We've been talking a lot about the Trump administration, guns, and the NRA. And here's what one listener had to say following yesterday's show.
It's Jim in St. Pete. I guess it ties into the show today. It seems like everything does anymore, but I was late reading the Times and just read it a few minutes ago, and page two in the discovery or the discussion of Hope Hicks leaving, she was described as glamorous sidekick and validator. Doesn't sound like a real position. How do you put that in a job offering? Glamorous sidekick and validator. Wonderful. Thanks, Rob. Keep up the great work.
Well, there you have a listener comment that came in after yesterday's program. Tomorrow in Ybor City, for the first time ever, there will be the International Sex Workers' Rights Day celebration. It takes place in Ybor City on 7th Avenue and 14th Street. And with us is one of the organizers of the event, Sydney Eastman. And Sydney joins us on the phone right now. Hi, Sydney. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks. How are you?
I'm good. So let me ask you, this is the first time that there will be a Sex Workers' Rights Day celebration. I wasn't aware that this was a celebration that went on, but apparently this has gone on since 2001. Is that right?
That's right. It goes back to 2001 when over 25,000 sex workers and their supporters took to the streets of India. Despite prohibitionists' attempts to take their permits and silence them, they still went out, they were loud, and in solidarity with them, as well as prohibited workers around the world. Subsequently, there have been International Sex Workers' Rights Day celebrations every year.
So what is a sex worker?
So a sex worker could be anybody from, you know, an exotic dancer, somebody who works, you know, in a strip club. That could be, you know, somebody who does pornography. It could be somebody who, you know, go-go dancers, burlesque dancers, topless dancers. It could be an escort, somebody who does street-based sex work. There's a lot of different industries and trades to be involved in, and it really just depends on the person.
And would you say that the Tampa Bay area is a an area where a large number of people engage in sex work?
I doubt that it's a higher percentage or proportion of our population than most other areas. I do think we have more strip clubs, though, per capita than anywhere in the United States. So we definitely want to give a shout-out to all the hard-working ladies and men in the strip clubs around Tampa Bay.
Now, Sydney, could I ask how you got involved in this?
Yeah, so the Sex Worker Solidarity Network was just formed, I would say, 4 months ago. We're brand new. I'm a volunteer, but it's a 100% sex worker-led collective working with community allies and advocates to better meet the needs of sex workers, as well as advocate for the rights of sex workers.
So you yourself are a volunteer. Does that mean that you're not a sex worker yourself?
I'm not, no.
Okay, all right. So what would you say the big issues are facing sex workers here in the Tampa Bay area?
I think there's a lot of misconceptions, a lot of stigma. I think, you know, first, there's never really been a strong presence of advocacy for sex workers. So, you know, we have this idea in our minds that, you know, sex workers are people who are criminals or dirty or wrong in some way, or they came from a bad family, or maybe they use drugs. And most of that's not true. The reality is, for most folks, it's just a job like any other. So, you know, we kind of want to highlight that it doesn't have to be glamorous nor degrading for us to recognize folks and recognize that they need rights. There is one issue that we kind of want to highlight, and that is that, you know, last year there were 113 prostitution arrests made. That means people are still being arrested for having sex. Yet we only apprehended 27 rapists. So another thing we want to point out is, are we protecting the right people?
So this is in Tampa, that more people are arrested for engaging in prostitution than they are for committing the crime of rape.
That's correct.
Yeah. Sydney, I think a lot of people would say, you know, I don't know anything about the sex worker trade, but I would hope that if people had a choice, they wouldn't have to work in the sex worker industry. You know, I think some people fear that folks who are in the sex worker industry may be in part, you know, that they may work under harsh conditions. They may be dangerous conditions. Sometimes they could be exploited. What would you say to those folks that say that, you know, I wish that you weren't working, or sex workers rather, weren't working in that kind of industry?
Well, I think we really have to look at, you know, individual autonomy first and foremost. Does this person want to be in the trade? If so, then that's not really anybody's business but theirs. Of course, what we do with our bodies is only our business. As far as exploitation, exploitation is imminent in our society, unfortunately. We have to work, you know, or we starve. So sex work is a legitimate and viable option for most people. For a lot of folks, they might find a lot of freedom in it because they get to choose their hours. They might get to choose their clients. But in large part, because the trade is underground, and folks can't be open, they're led into more dangerous situations. They could be more prone to violence as they're not able to screen their clients. They don't have as easy access to health care because, you know, no strip club offers health benefits. And certainly if you're an independent contractor or, you know, a private escort, you don't have health benefits. So there's a lot of issues facing sex workers as workers that we need to be concerned about. And if folks want to say, well, I wish you would choose a different trade, you know, you can wish for that, but we would ask that you support the needs of sex workers based on what they are asking for. And the things that sex workers largely are asking for is just to be respected and, you know, looked at as, you know, workers.
Well, we're talking with Sydney Eastman, who is one of the organizers of tomorrow's Sex Worker Solidarity Rights Day, a rally and dance party that takes place on 7th Avenue in Ybor City tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. And you can find out more at sexworkersolidaritynetwork.org. And this is WMNF in Tampa. So, Sydney, is there a model where people who are engaged in sex work are not exploited, they're treated fairly, they're not in danger of having crimes committed against them? Is there a country or a place in the U.S. where, you know, the situation has been worked out so that people can maybe save some money, not be exploited, and practice this kind of work for as long as they choose?
Certainly there are some models that work better than others. Anchorage, Alaska recently passed an immunity ordinance, which, you know, allows people who are engaging, specifically prohibited sex workers, so folks engaging in what we would call prostitution, I say sex work, but prostitution, they're immune from prosecution when reaching out for services for abuse or, you know, reaching out to 911 in case they want to report, you know, an abuser. As it stands right now, you know, in Tampa, if you're faced with, you know, a violent predator, you can't really reach out to the police without risking arrest. So immunity is a start. ultimately, though, decriminalization has proven to be the most safe. That allows sex workers to work completely above ground without having to fear persecution and without being made so vulnerable to violent predators who might be opportunistically preying on them, because they know there's not a whole lot of protection for sex workers.
Sydney, do you know many people that engage in this kind of work, and can you tell us why they went into this kind of work?
I mean, I think there's a myriad of reasons. Folks in sex work come from all backgrounds. I will say definitely opportunity has a lot to do with it. If your job options are McDonald's, a cashier at Publix, or a strip club, you're probably going to go for the strip club, if only because you can make a lot more money there. There's also a lot of folks who work in sex work part-time because they recognize that it's an easy, accessible way to make part-time money on top of their full-time job. So it really just depends on the situation of the worker. It really depends.
Well, tell us what's going to happen on Saturday night in Ybor City.
I'm so glad you asked. So Saturday night, we're going to come together at 10 p.m., we're asking everybody to wear red in solidarity, and that's the sort of sex workers' liberation color. We're going to share some anonymous stories from local sex workers. We're also going to pass out beads, condoms, just share some chants and dance down the streets, hoping to engage other workers and other folks, other partygoers, in some of our dialogue.
Gets underway at 10 o'clock at 7th Avenue and 14th Street. I'm trying to remember what building is there at 7th Avenue and 14th in Ybor City.
So that's near the Bricks, but there's also a Mail Review pretty nearby that we kind of wanted to show some love to, if they'll let us. And if you don't know what a Mail Review is, that's where, primarily men go to dance. And it could be the ladies watching or men as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, could you take a phone call from a listener?
I could.
All right. Let's go to somebody who wants to remain anonymous in Pinellas County. And anonymous, you're on the air with Sydney Eastman, who is one of the organizers of the Sex Workers' Rights Day rally and dance party in Ybor City this Saturday. Anonymous, what's your question?
Well, actually, I would like to call her out that there are a lot of women in this situation, but my daughter, who was abused, and we put the abuser in jail, but the damage was done. And she ended up going into the strip club, and what I experienced in having to love her through this is those, I would say, such a high percentage of those girls were sexually abused as children. Then they had other situations where their mother's boyfriends were abusing these girls, and the mothers turned them out because they were having sex with their boyfriend. That these girls were thrown out at a very young age. My heart goes that we need more counseling. We need more accountability for these gentlemen who have abused these girls and put their mindset that that's all that they're good for is what their body can. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm trying to maintain. And she's very eloquently spoken. And I do believe that there might be some voluntary sex workers, but they are going to be such a small number that these women have been neglected. Their education has been neglected. Their emotional state has been neglected. And one thing she is not saying, which is absolutely ludicrous to me that I found out, these girls have to pay the bar. the strip. They have to pay their way in. They are charged between $20 and $70 a night to get up there and take their clothes off for these, I would say, deviant men who take their money that should be feeding their children and putting shoes on their clothes and okay. Rob?
Well, Anonymous, I think you've made your case very well, and I'm sorry to hear about your daughter. Was the man who attacked your daughter, was he ever put in jail?
Yes, he was put in jail, and it was before they had to do 80% of their time. He abused her for like 5 or 6 years, and he used a mind game on her that, anyway, it was a very sick man, and he only got 4.5 years, and he abused her for 5 years. He was originally sentenced to 17 years, although he is on the sex registry, and he is having consequences. He is reaping what he sowed. But my daughter this happened between the ages of 9 and 13, is bipolar. Which, of course, they say manic depressant. She was on drugs. She did go into that business, and there are so many of those girls who to strip. They take drugs. They take Xanax. They take the Oxy and the Roxy's and the alcohol. And but of course, my biggest thing that I found was so ludicrous is that she had to pay the bar to strip. And we never went into any lines that she crossed. Praise God, she's out of it. She's in NA. We found a wonderful counselor who is helping her deal with her post-traumatic stress. And if anything, if this woman wants her organization to do anything, she needs to be looking for counselors. She needs to be looking for fundage for the reality of the bottom line of, because I cannot believe in my mind's eye, because my daughter got it from her mama, and we were very, have been said, beautiful and voluptuous women, and very big busted, you know, all the things that they want naturally without cosmetics or surgery. And, so if she's going to have this organization, I hope that she proceeds.
I would really like to respond.
Yeah, Sydney, I want you to respond. Anonymous, thank you so much. Thanks for telling us your story.
Rob, I to be honest with you, I do not begrudge her women, because I don't blame them. This is a part of society that it's like she says, it's on the underground, and I do believe that we do need to make some changes, but to make it sound like this is some wonderful job, and yes, they make a lot of money, but I've always thought about those kids who are not getting their child support because this woman is getting $500 to $600 a night.
Yeah. All right. Anonymous, thank you. Thank you for telling us your story.
Thank you, Rob.
All right. I hope your daughter's condition improves. All right. So Sydney Eastman with the International Sex Workers' Rights Day, what would you say about that situation?
Well, first, I mean, I could hear in Anonymous's voice the pain and the struggle, and I want to just express my absolute sympathies because I know it's very difficult to talk about. Sexual violence is a reality in our society. And having had to experience that for years, I can only imagine the toll that takes on somebody. So, you know, first, I just want to express my sympathies to Anonymous and you know, thank them for their bravery in coming forward and telling their story. I agree that, you know, our first and foremost priority is to serve sex workers, serve the needs of sex workers. And by that means listening to their self-determined needs. What we notice is very simple things. Lack of access to health care, lack of access to services is another one. So we have been engaging with social workers. We have been engaging with, lawyers, academics as well, just people who have a deep understanding of the human condition in order to better facilitate a response, a compassionate response, something that sex workers often don't receive under prohibition. But there seem to be some misconceptions, this idea that, the only reason sex workers exist is because they think that's all they're good for. I would have to, kindly disagree and say, that we live under conditions that mean we have to work. A consensual exchange of services for money is no more degrading than a consensual exchange of services for money, whatever those services are. So I think it's more the fact that this business is underground, that men can prey on women with impunity. Like we pointed out earlier, we are attacking the women. We're not attacking predators when it comes to the law. So that's one issue. Another issue is sometimes there are, male managers who get to decide how much your house fee is. And often that's the case. And then you have to tip out bouncers who may or may not protect you while you're there. So those are things that we would definitely advocate for, the empowerment of workers so that they can have full ownership over their businesses, over their work, and not have to answer to an exploitative boss who gets to take their hard-earned money.
Sydney, when Anonymous said that her daughter was bipolar and she had some problems, I wonder, is there, for folks who choose to get out of sex work, if they want to transfer to some other kind of work, is there a way, is there an organization that provides counseling, education, maybe help with drug addiction or alcohol addiction? Is there a way for folks who want to make the transition out to some other kind of work? Is there an easy way to do that?
There's not an easy way to do anything in this culture right now when it comes to drugs and alcohol. We have very lacking services. I recall a woman telling me, and she had a terrible drug addiction, no more than 18 or 19 years old, struggling on heroin, and telling me that it would be a 6-month waiting period for her to get into a public rehabilitation facility. That's despicable.
Yeah.
For folks wanting to exit the business, absolutely, that's something we support. We support anybody's autonomous, self-determined needs, whatever those are.
And just getting back to your earlier point, do the police take crimes against sex workers seriously, in your experience?
No, and there's been a lot of historical cases. Again, I'm very glad that this predator who preyed on Anonymous's poor daughter, I'm glad that that person was brought to justice. Too often, that's not what happens. We tend to blame the sex worker for existing in the first place. So in the famous case of Alicia Walker, somebody posing as a client threatened her with a knife, tried to stab her. She defended herself, and she's now sitting in prison for 15 years. That was essentially the justice system telling her that she's not allowed to defend herself. She was punished for surviving simply because she worked in the sex business. I don't know that we would treat everybody else that way. We believe in stand your ground in this country. We believe in the right to self-defense. But when it comes to sex workers, self-defense doesn't exist.
Well, Sydney, one more time, you're with the Restorative Justice Coalition and with the Sex Workers Solidarity Organization. There's a rally and dance party in Ybor City this Saturday night at 10 o'clock. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, like I said, we're just going to rally at 7th and 14th. We're going to rally there. We have speakers from varying organizations. I think we'll have the Restorative Justice Coalition speaking. We'll have a few folks reading anonymous stories. I think we'll have Organized Florida might have somebody out there. So it'll just be a group of us. We're going to rally folks together and then walk through Centro Ybor and pass out condoms and, you know, maybe some beads if we have enough of them. We're encouraging people to wear red in solidarity, and we want to, of course, celebrate all of the people who unfortunately have to work Saturday night because they have to make a living. But we're hoping if you're available Saturday night, you'll come and join us because it's going to be a blast.
All right, Sydney Eastman of the Sex Workers Solidarity Network, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, good to talk to you, Sydney. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're going to switch gears and talk about some of the other news stories. And in a few minutes, I'll open up the phone lines, and we can go back and talk about this later on. Just want to mention that the reading from the New York Times, the top lobbyist for the National Rifle Association claimed last night that President Trump had retreated from his surprising support a day earlier for gun control measures after a meeting with NRA officials and Vice President Mike Pence in the Oval Office last night. The NRA lobbyist, Chris Cox, posted on Twitter just after 9 yesterday evening that he had met with the president and the vice president, saying that both of them support the Second Amendment and they support strong due process and do not want gun control. Now, this seems like to be a reversal for the president. The president tweeted last night, a great meeting in the Oval Office tonight with the NRA. The tweets suggest that the NRA took about a day to change the president's mind away from his apparent embrace of gun control during that televised meeting on Wednesday with members of Congress. In that meeting, President Trump called for comprehensive legislation that would have, among other things, expanded background checks to firearms purchased at gun shows and on the internet. That's a measure favored by Democrats and opposed by the NRA. President Trump also stunned lawmakers from both parties by suggesting that he would support measures to allow authorities to seize guns from mentally ill people or those who could pose a danger without first following due process, like appearing before a judge. President Trump said, "I like taking the guns early, take the guns first, and then go through due process second." That was the president on Wednesday. Then apparently he's changed his mind. I'm wondering, do you know where the president stands on the question of guns? Is it clear after this week? Is the president giving you any sort of strong indication where he stands on guns? I just want to mention one other thing. Some of the most controversial gun bills in the U.S. first passed in the state legislature in Tallahassee. And there's one woman who has had a very large influence in all of these gun legislative measures. Mike Spies is a reporter for The New Yorker, and he wrote a profile of this woman, the NRA lobbyist Marion Hammer, for The New Yorker magazine. And he spoke with Luis Hernandez of WLRN Radio in South Florida, public radio station there, about the power of Marion Hammer in Tallahassee. Let's listen in on that interview.
She would be directly corresponding with, you know, the policy chief on a particular committee. And it's not that that's an illegal thing to do. Lobbyists do that. But what's different was that, or what stood out was that she was giving the government staffer directions on what language should and should not go in the bill, and also having oversight for what language should and shouldn't go in the bill, being able to veto decisions that she thought were either watering down the legislation or somehow, you know, moving it in the wrong direction. But she would have these conversations without, you know, seeing a lawmaker, without it was just as if she was the lawmaker.
One of the other things, too, is you point out that she is very active through emails, mostly, with Florida's NRA members and uses that as a very powerful tool.
It's a time-tested method for her. So first I should say, maybe I'll come back to that. You know, she's got, according to NRA legal documents I have, the NRA says it's got, at least 300,000 members in Florida. former Senator Greg Evers, who recently passed away, you know, he suggested and others suggested the same thing, that her network really could consist of a couple million people. And one thing that's time tested is that when she reaches out to them and she tells them to do something, which is, you know, could be in one case to email the governor's office to say, don't appoint this person to a circuit court judgeship because of something he did in the legislature, they really follow through. I mean, you actually, and this is something all lawmakers will tell you, I mean, you'll actually get thousands of emails. So it's a very intimidating thing, in part because if you're someone who's in a Republican district, that's very concerning if you're running for re-election and you've got a primary coming up. I mean, these are people who are, these are your constituents. And if they're angry at you and they believe that you're a traitor, which is usually the sort of language that they get painted in, you're worried. You're genuinely worried, and you actually have a right to be worried.
Do you think there's anything different about this situation now with the Parkland shooting that she'll be able to continue to push back on any kind of, because right now they're looking at gun legislation in Tallahassee. The governor even said everything's on the table for now. Do you think that she has the ability to push this back, or do you think this may be different?
The situation is different for obvious reasons, with very articulate students affected by this horrible event speaking out in ways that are just, there's nothing that's ever compared to it before. Even perhaps more importantly, is it seems like you have enough Republicans that are on board to even make these very moderate, or pass perhaps, but I have to characterize as very moderate restrictions. It's very hard for Marion Hammer to punish a lot of Republicans if they in fact go along with the bills that are before the House and the Senate. But should be clear, it's still very conceivable that the things that she dislikes most about the bill, raising the minimum age and then also expanding the 3-day waiting period to all gun purchases, one or both of those things could potentially come out, because there's something in that bill that Democrats really don't like, which is the prospect of teachers getting armed.
Yeah.
And so that's a little bit of a poison pill. So you can imagine, I could imagine a trade happening. Maybe that comes out in exchange for getting rid of the minimum age requirement. And I think if the minimum age requirement gets taken out of the bill, or the 3-day waiting period, or both, I mean, she'll be able to, and will, at least claim a partial victory. At the end of the day, you know, Governor Scott certainly can, I think, influence what happens in the legislature, but he's only required to deal with what comes on his desk.
Well, that was an interview that Mike Spies, who wrote the profile of NRA lobbyist Marion Hammer in the current New Yorker, that was part of an interview he did with Luis Hernandez from WLRN Radio. So Marion Hammer, the NRA lobbyist, has been there for about 40 years. She's gotten 20 bills passed in the last few years. She's written a lot of the bills. In fact, the legislators go to her and ask her to edit and write and comment on bills related to guns. She's been able to get legislation passed in Tallahassee that prevents local governments from passing their own gun ordinances. There are some people that are bucking against that, including Les Miller from Hillsborough County. He's thinking that he's going to try to get a bill passed at the Hillsborough County Commission that would ban the sale of semi-automatic weapons. But Hammer has been pretty successful. She's been there a long time. If you go up to Tallahassee, you're likely to see her sitting in committee hearing rooms. So from the News Service of Florida, this story came out this morning. Legislative leaders maintain there isn't anything there when asked about that story in the New Yorker describing National Rifle Association lobbyist Marion Hammer's influence throughout the state capitol, particularly her sway in helping write and dictate language in bills. But the story has State Representative Dave Richardson of Miami Beach, a Democrat, prepared to undertake a one-man investigation, if necessary, to determine how much Hammer's influence reaches into the staff ranks. Now, the state representative Richardson said, "I'm deeply troubled by what is included in this article in terms of the relationship of Ms. Hammer with legislative staff," he said during a House Public Integrity and Ethics Committee meeting this week. He said there are comments concerning her introduction of language directly with staff outside of member participation, and I think it's something to be investigated. In the lengthy New Yorker article, author Mike Spies noted that Hammer is not an elected official, but she can create policy, see it through to passage, and use government resources to achieve her aims. These days, Florida's Republican-controlled legislature almost never allows any bill that appears to hinder gun owners to come up for a vote. Now, that was from the news service of Florida this morning. So we can talk about that, the power of the NRA in Tallahassee and the influence of Marion Hammer. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. We can also talk about the interview with Sydney Eastman from the Sex Workers Solidarity Network. And we can talk about President Trump's apparent change in thinking on guns after a meeting last night at the White House, late last night, with a lobbyist from the NRA. We can talk about that. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to DJ, who's in Tampa. DJ, you're on M&F. What would you like to comment about?
Rob, what up? Smells so good. I'm going to check in. Okay, I got 2 points. First of all, speaking from an African-American standpoint, when it comes to the gun issue, we are completely unrelated to this NRA issue. I mean, you can come to my neighborhood. I can leave my house right now, go to my neighborhood, spend about 15 minutes walking around. I can get all kind of guns. Okay, so this is all kind of illegal guns on the streets themselves. I mean, you got...
And DJ, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a bad thing.
All right, so what do you think ought to be done about it?
You know, well, when it comes to this regulation, you got to get down to a more of a street level. You know, how are we going to be able to do that? I mean, more of a private gun sale level, you know what I'm saying? Because you can go on Craigslist and buy a gun right now. I mean, when we talk about national registries and stuff, if we don't get on the black market of it, I mean, those guns will steadily stay floating around on the street. You know what I'm saying? Or when we get guns that get confiscated by the police department and somehow those same guns end up back on the street. So those same regulations need to be looked at, you know, and that's a big problem. And I know plenty of kids running around with guns, and, you know, you can either, you know, try to say something to them, you know, and take that chance, try to report them, and then take that chance, you know what I'm saying? And they might not even have a gun on them, you know, going and ditch the gun. So, I mean, we do got I guess from a African-American community standpoint, our kids run around with a lot of guns, you know, so... we need a lot of more help on that level. You know, that's not an NRA issue.
And DJ, what would you think of a buyback program? What would you think of the government saying, look...
We've had that.
Right, but you know, let's say a massive buyback program. I know individual communities, the city of Tampa, Hillsborough County, other communities around the Bay Area have had buybacks. But what about a national buyback to say, look, if you don't want the gun, we'll buy it back. We'll give you a fair price for it and try to take some of the guns off the street in a national way, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to it.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. You know, just on the national state and then all the way to the local level. I mean, just try to hit it on all levels, you know what I'm saying, to try to get a maximum impact.
And to your point, too, make sure that those guns are not resold, but make sure that they're destroyed, yeah.
Yeah, and can I make one point on for the sex worker?
Okay.
Okay, and I don't want to say sex workers. College, there's a lot of people, women that go to college, you know, students that are paying their way through, you know, college because of high student loans and the way that our educational system is set up. But when she said that, you know, we have the most strip clubs here in the world, I guess in the United States, if I went to Germany, okay, so if you want to compare a sexually exploited culture, well, then go to Germany where they have brothels on every corner, they have sex shops on every corner. But one thing they don't have is a high STD rate. They don't have a high rape rate. Because the government regulates their whole sex industry. All the brothels are regulated. All the women that work in the brothels, in the windows and everything, have to go through regular. They're like a union. You know what I'm saying? They go through regular health checks. It's very, very regulated. And it's a business.
All right.
So well, if you want to get a model, go look at the Germany model.
All right. DJ, thanks a lot. Thanks for that suggestion. You. All right. So what do you think? 813-239-9663. You can also send an email into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Adam writes this regarding the woman who called in earlier. Why do I feel the pain for what happened to that previous caller's daughter? I do think that he went on to generalize way too much. His situation is not representative of all sex workers. I think we're talking about a she here. It's wrong for her to impose her belief that they are all damaged, that sex workers are all damaged and don't want to do it. That is perpetuating a stigma, writes Adam. And then Joe writes this. He says, regarding Trump and gun control, he says, so the chump once again does a flip-flop. It took a couple of calls from his masters at the NRA to reel him in. I am not surprised at all. What surprised me was his open discussion in which he proposed stronger laws, which was way off the charter for him, writes Joe. Let's go back to the phones, and we've got one open line, too, by the way, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Skip, who's in Bradenton. Skip, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yeah, hi, Rob. Skip Hannon from Bradenton. I heard you mention the person from the NRA that has a lot of power.
Marion Hammer, yeah.
Yeah, well, I wrote to the local papers and pertaining to the Parkland students and their power that they've developed. Fortunately, there are 2,740,856 students in the state of Florida. You can get that on the site, the Department of Education. And there's also several hundred thousand teachers. Now, all these folks have relatives, friends, allies. I have a feeling that finally there'll be a little movement regarding gun control, and it's going to be settled at the ballot box. We have a wave that's rolling, started by Emma Gonzalez and a lot of these fine folks that speak out against politicians who take money from the NRA. So I think finally something may move, at least we certainly hope so. So I just wanted to make that comment. As far as the teachers with guns, it's total insanity. You have a teacher who is teaching, minding her own business in school. All of a sudden some guy comes in with a pistol or an automatic rifle. Do you think that teacher is going to be a Wyatt Earp and all of a sudden pull out that gun and start firing? It's an impossible idea that anyone with any common sense would want to arm teachers in school.
Yeah, I think it takes constant training to know how to respond to an active shooter situation. You can't just take training for a week or two and then a year later be involved in that situation and handle it well. You've got to take that training every week.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Skip, thanks a lot.
All right, Rob. Have
thanks.
A good day.
All right, great to hear from you. You know, I think the debate, too, over the NRA and whether the NRA wins this time, it all depends on who gets to describe the other side better. So if the NRA is able to describe its fight as a fight against a dangerous government or, you know, on behalf of freedom, if that is the debate that emerges, or if on the other side, the other side says that the NRA is a death lobby or a lobby for armed killers, or that, you know, either you love your kids or you love the NRA and you've got to choose. If the other side is able to paint the NRA in that way, I think they're going to win. But it all depends on who wins the branding side. I think, you know, Donald Trump is onto something. You've got to brand the other side if you want to win the battle, and you got to brand the other side early. We'll see which side takes the strongest measures to brand the other side. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Craig in Sarasota. Craig, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
I would definitely support a gun buyback program. Was that the topic?
Well, we're actually all over the map. We're talking about the president's apparent reversal on gun control. We're talking about sex workers, and we're talking about the power of the NRA lobbyist in Tallahassee to apparently write legislation that she's got a pretty good track record. She's gotten a lot passed. So we can talk about any one of those topics or anything else you want to talk about, Craig.
Okay. I think that slowly the student leaders are going to wear down some of the effects of Beyond Mary pattern with this Shame on You program. I think that votes are going to get us there eventually, but it seems like they're going to keep the pressure on. And the tide seems to be turning.
Yeah, I do think that the kids are pretty magnetic. I think it's you know, it's all depends on what you're willing to turn off on the TV. And I think the kids' statements are so powerful, they're hard to tune out. And so as long as people keep tuning into the kids, I think they've got a leg up. All right, Craig, thanks a lot. Great to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin. Gary, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, buddy, first of all, Marion Hammer, the Hammer, that's a pretty appropriate name for her. She is a determined little lady and always has been really big on pro-hunting, brags about killing animals as a child, and she's not just a death merchant. She's also anti-environmentalist, anti-public lands, anti-wildlife protection. And it's amazing that she gets to operate mostly under the radar until these recent exposés. So thanks for bringing her to our attention. Now, going back to your previous guest, I have family that lives in the Netherlands where so-called prostitution, sex work, isn't just legal. It's in the Constitution. For example, sex workers are considered totally legitimate business people, and providing therapeutic services to the community. When one of my relatives' close friends was disabled and was in terminal phase, dying, the state government, through its health care, hired a professional sex therapist worker to come and make love to him so that he had some female affection and love before he passed away. It's such a weird approach, isn't it? And now, that's not to say, in my visits, the red light district in Amsterdam and other cities where there's women sitting in windows under a red light bulb, that isn't all so savory either. It is a little bit sleazy. Many of those women are pimped. Many of them are women without papers who were tricked into coming to Holland under the pretense of having a white-collar regular job and then ended up basically being documentless sex slaves. But in the white sex worker industry in the Netherlands, white, not ethnic, meaning the above ground, the sex workers are viewed as, like I say, almost as medical psychological therapists. They believe that it helps to keep the rate of rape and pedophilia and suicide down. And it's viewed completely differently than over here. And one last thing is, one of the things about the sex crime, the criminalization of sex workers in America is the terrible things that the vice cops do. The so-called vice squad cops often are having sex with the sex workers before busting them. It's just like with the prohibition of weed. So, you know, it's not all positive, and some women do feel like they have to sell their bodies in order to survive, and it is a form of slavery almost. But It doesn't have to be that way. And in other countries, just like with so many other things, they've got a better way of dealing with it.
All right, Gary, thanks. Thanks for your insights. Great
have
to hear from you.
Have a great
All right, you too. 813 writes, if they arm teachers, I will homeschool my kids. That's Michelle, who's out there in cyberspace. Deborah in Sarasota writes, the sex industry is a byproduct of the fact that women are underpaid in the society, and out of desperation, they resort to the sex trade for the money. When women are paid commensurate to men, the sex industry will dwindle. In my research on this topic, for most women, displaying their bodies sexually to strangers has a detrimental psychological effect. That's Deborah's email from Sarasota. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Elizabeth in Riverview. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on. What would you like to say?
I have a lot to say, as usual, Rob. You know that. With regard to Mr. Tweet, and his mind. I think you're giving him credit for having a viable mind, and I'm not sure he does. All right, when we go on to the bar dancers, I did have occasion to be involved with them. Oh, I think that was back in the 1970s. Most of them were people in extremis. It was all they could do at that particular time. They needed the money. And yes, they had to pay the bloody bar for the privilege of doing it. And when we come on to the gentlemen who are speaking of the sex business in Germany and in Holland, they are absolutely correct. It's a business, well-organized, well-regulated, and well-received. And then we come on down to the legislator. I have been calling legislators, no one in specific. I've been calling them all parrots. And what you are telling me about this woman who speaks to them, yes, they are all parrots. They say exactly what they are told by the NRA. And then one further thing. I will run out of gas here in a minute, Ron, but I do have a lot to say, as usual. Men in power who are now being accused, charged, and proven guilty of their nastiness to female workers, they're not only nasty, they're cheap. They won't even spend their money and go out and buy a prostitute. Thank you very much, Rob.
All right, Elizabeth.
That's my wad.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I'm surprised you had so much to say about this sex topic. But, Elizabeth, thanks. Always great to hear from you.
Well, I knew a bit about it there back in the 70s. My husband was a lawyer.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye. And let's go to Ann in Bradenton. Ann, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hey there. Yes, regarding the sex workers,
yeah.
I think it's deplorable that anybody would want to encourage sex workers. I mean, what a way to invite demons into your body. Let's be sure about this. This is a mortal sin, having sex outside of marriage, and that's all I have to say.
All right, Ann.
But with regard to the shootings in Parkland, This is another Big Brother orchestration, and why is it that we're just seeing a couple head children with talking heads on the mainstream media, like David Hogg, that is older than 18?
Yeah. So you buy, Ann, thanks a lot. You buy into the conspiracy theories? I don't buy into those conspiracy theories. There's hundreds of those kids. And David Hogg is one of them, and he has explained that he's not an actor. So, Ann, I'm glad you called in. It's good to hear from people that listen to InfoWars. I appreciate your call greatly. So our listeners can decide for themselves who's on the right track. Let's go to Jeff in Sarasota. Jeff, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, calling in again. I love your show. I want a quick point. If you're going to frame this PR battle of us against them and paint all NRA members as evil killers, you're not going to win, because most NRA members are good people, and they love the Constitution, they love freedom, and they're not killers. You know, it's not going to fly. And also, I know you're running out of time. If you research, and this is for real, research MK Ultra. Started in the 50s, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, you'll find the origins of these mass shootings. It's for real.
Yeah, well, Jeff, I think MK Ultra actually is real, but I don't think there's any evidence at all that this guy Cruz in Parkland was part of some sort of CIA plot. I think there's zero evidence of that, and that's why, you know, I think people are listening to a lot of weird stuff without any sort of evidence. If you've got evidence,
New York Times, that's a credible source.
Well, the New York Times is not reporting that Cruz was part of MK Ultra. I mean, that's clearly false.
Well, read the obituary for Sidney Gottlieb.
Well, no, I'm saying that the U.S. government did experiment with drugs to try to create killers. I mean, that's pretty well documented. But to say that this guy Cruz and the Valentine's Day Massacre is somehow part of a CIA plot, I think that's really beneath contempt. That's silly. There's no evidence of that. But Gottlieb is a real person, and MK Ultra is real. But you can't extrapolate. You can't make stuff up. If you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115, and I'm going to play those comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned for Daniel Ruth. He's coming up next. Thanks to Patty Perkins.